Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
Welcome to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim Garrity is still gallivanting somewhere in the Caribbean aboard the National Review cruise, so we're thrilled to have back Dan Foster, who's with us on Monday, and will be with us again on Friday. And Dan, three martinis as always, one good news for conservatives, one bad news, and one just plain bizarre, but I'd say today's is probably more bad news if it actually comes true. But first of all, the good news, and it's on the leadership elections on Capitol Hill, and we got this phenomenal news out of the Democratic side of the U.S. Senate today.
It's been my honor to serve as the Democratic leader for the last 6 years, and my team was just reelected.
Exact same Senate Democratic team that lost six seats. On the House side, it hasn't been announced yet, but Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, they even created a new position to keep the entire leadership team together, so Jim Clyburn would still have a job. Is this just the gift that keeps on giving for conservatives? What's going on here?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think this can only be good news for Republicans and conservatives. The Senate has me scratching my head a little bit. That's quite a bit of positive thinking by Senator Reid to say that his team got reelected. I think that's a bad misreading of the situation. On the House side, though, it does make a little more sense. Think about it. The losses actually hurt the Blue Dog Caucus and the moderates most. So, ironically, the Democratic caucus became more ideologically pure and more inclined to support the likes of Nancy Pelosi. Hoyer makes sense because, as Paul Ryan said on CNBC yesterday, he's the only guy conservatives talk to.
Right.
Paul Ryan said something shocking, that he had one conversation with Nancy Pelosi 6 years ago, and that's been it. And Clyburn, again, with the smaller Democratic caucus, the Congressional Black Caucus now makes up a third of their membership. So this was an important and admittedly, basically, by the leadership, affirmative action move.
Very interesting. And you mentioned the House side, of course, and they're the ones that actually lost the majority. Harry Reid can at least make the claim that they hung on to the majority, even though they lost about half of it. Over on MSNBC, I believe this was on Tuesday, Connecticut Congressman John Larson, who's the number four Democrat, I guess. He's the caucus chairman, talking with Chris Jansing and explaining why, in his opinion, Democrats really lost. It wasn't the issues they were pushing, and it wasn't the agenda or the ideology. Here's what he said.
Well, I think that we got a lot done, but we didn't get done enough in the voters' minds. And that enough has to do specifically with jobs and putting people back to work. Even though our Make It in America and Settled Around the World was a very important and worked very well on two coasts, but not in the heartland. And there was an awful lot of money spent in a number of races.
So they weren't activist enough, and that darn special money is the only reason that so many of their guys got crushed in the Midwest.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think we have to officially retire this secret outside money bit, because number one, the election's over. Number two, every analysis you look at shows that the Democrats outspent the Republicans at the end of the day in this election. It wasn't about secret money. And as far as the other side, I mean, is Representative Larson just realizing that the Democrats are a regional coastal party?
Right.
Maybe it'll change his point of view.
Well, there's been the accusation forever that the Midwest was flyover country, and that's, I think, the way the voters really saw the Democrats, at least in this election cycle. They were much kinder to them in 06 and 08, but not this time around. We'll see how it progresses from here. But let's move on to one of the coasts, way up there on the coast of Alaska, where Joe Miller's been fighting to try and get the existing law to be the standard for counting ballots. Hard to say at this point whether he's going to succeed. And at this point, it looks like it may not even matter. A lot of folks saying that it's all over but the final vote count now, and that Lisa Murkowski actually succeeded with this write-in campaign.
Yeah, this is one of the Senate races that I got wrong. I did think Joe Miller was going to pull it out. I just couldn't see Lisa Murkowski breaking the record for writing campaign, which is what she had to do to win. But at the end of the day, I think the deciding factors were her name recognition. The Murkowski name goes back in Alaska politics half a century. And also some in a state like Alaska, which is a net sort of importer of federal dollars, pork matters. And Murkowski promised she'd bring the pork, and she said Joe Miller wouldn't. And then you can't not place some of the blame on Miller himself. He had some tweets that were almost literally measuring the curtains for his new office in Washington. He got a little cocky. He handcuffed a reporter. There were some personality flaws with Miller as well.
Yeah, certainly true. And in terms of how you expect Murkowski to act, do you feel like she's been chastened even a little bit by losing the primary, or will she come back to Washington even more to the left than she was before, you think?
I think she's been emboldened, and you heard her say some pretty inciting things about Senator DeMint She just, I can't remember what the outlet was, but she just said yesterday that she thinks Senator DeMint is out for his own initiative and that he cost the Republicans the Senate. So I think with her existing colleagues, she'll probably be just as chummy as ever in the kind of GOP good old boys and girls club. But she's certainly got daggers for a few select Tea Party-backed Senate Republicans.
All right. We've swallowed down the good and the bad martinis. Let's get on to the bizarre slash outrageous one now. And this kind of goes along with what we talked about on Monday, but in a different format. On Monday in this segment, we talked about how a lot of people are recoiling at some of the new invasive security procedures at the airports. Of course, in recent years, we've dealt with government mandates on what kind of light bulbs we can buy and how much water our toilet should consume per flush. And now Ray LaHood, who's already declared war on texting while driving, which a lot of people think is a good idea, now trying to discover new technology that would prevent cell phones from even being possible to be used in the car by driver or passenger. Is this necessary for our safety, or is this just the government going way too far?
No, I think you know the answer. It's encroaching nanny statism, but it's not surprising from this administration. After all, they don't think that we can make decisions about whether or not we should have health insurance and what kind of health insurance that should be. It's only natural that they think they should be able to control us at every moment, even as we're getting from point A to point B. But I've got a new idea. I don't think they're going far enough. I think what we need to do is install a kind of a speaker that emits a high-pitched screech that makes you so nauseous that you can't eat while driving. So that way you can't be distracted by that. And then you pull the radio out so you can't listen to talk radio while driving, so you won't be distracted by that. And pretty soon we'll all be safe and sound.
Yes, in our Chevy Volts, which will only cost us about $40,000 once they start rolling off the line here shortly.
That's right.
Dan, very sobering indeed. Bit by bit, it seems like this keeps happening, and in this administration a lot more frequently than it did before. Great to be with you. We'll talk again Friday. Dan Foster of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Join us Thursday for the 3 Martini Lunch.